Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. It's me, Jody, your best friend and inner voice who speaks to you in the language of snark. Each week, I break down the shows you love and love to hate and deep dive into those useless details that keep us all awake at night. Let me take the stress off you. You don't have to worry about accidentally liking a tweet from 2014 from a D-list reality star that everyone else forgot about. That was me, Ashley Angel from O-Town. Sorry about that. Now, before we get started, make sure to check out Reality Life with Kate Casey this week. She kindly asked me to watch an episode of MTV's Catfish, and you know me. That is the kind of show I love to snark on, so we had a ball breaking it all down. Down to Neve's pubic chest hair. So check that out, Reality Life with Kate Casey. And you know where to find me otherwise, at Reality TV Pod everywhere, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Patreon. You know the drill. Check out the show notes for all the easy links. This week on Patreon, I watch Netflix Age Gap, which features couples that are on totally opposite ends of the age spectrum. And naturally, I dove into Google and found some updates. I'll also be reading a little bit from preteen Jody's journal that I just found deep in the archives of the Huff family basement. So make sure you tune in. I will be hiding my severe blushing behind this microphone. Now let's get to the good stuff and check out what went down this week in reality TV. All right, let's get into some Married at First Sight and then some 60 Days In. These sneaky, sneaky producers and editors of Married at First Sight. They are just pulling us left and right these days. Now, I do have some opinions about it, but first let's see what went down this week. Now, Shawnice and Jeff D, our most disastrous couple from a few weeks ago, is now all puppies and rainbows and chips and dip. They're affectionate now. Jeff D isn't putting himself into a straitjacket when Shawnice is around anymore, and even talking about their role models for successful relationships when they were growing up. What did they look up to? Now, the best part of watching them together is that it really brings some comic relief and some lightness to the show. When Jeff D was giving Shawnice crap for how she was cooking her spaghetti sauce, I actually chuckled. I think Jeff D has kind of a unique sense of humor, and it makes Shawnice laugh, so I like that. I didn't enjoy Jeff D eating the crunch berries right before dinner, however. Shawnice may be giggling about it now, but, you know, give it 3 kids and 15 years later, and she will be Shannon Bador staring daggers at David for eating his blue corn tortilla chips and salsa before dinner every night. Now, Molly and John, another couple that has my brain and gut doing double takes like they do after I eat Chinese takeout, but Molly is sporting this newer ashy blonde hair again when they're at her mom's house. They're there. She's brought John with her. They're helping her sisters and her mom paint and fix up her house. Molly's sisters seem to really like John, so I guess I have to give him that, but I just can't get past his laugh. I'm trying really hard every week to try to figure out why it is like nails on a chalkboard to me. I'm thinking, like, did I know a jerk in high school that laughed like that? Or is it just because it's coming from John's face? I don't know. But nevertheless, Molly's plugging away at stuffing her feelings down and tolerating John long enough to become more physically attracted to him. Now, it seems like they were in a good place when they were rock climbing. But again, we have to ask the question, are we seeing things in order as they happened or not? I also think that when you're out and you're having a good time, you're doing stuff like this, yeah, it's really good and it's healthy for relationship. It helps lighten things up. But you also have to have some sort of connection and spark when you're not doing those things, because that's real life, is the being at home doing nothing. Real life is not always rock climbing and having a harness strapped around your crotch. Now, this also might be a controversial statement. I better get my attorney, Gloria Allred, on the line, but I think indoor rock climbing is a skinny girl date. We can even get Bethany to put a little TM next to it. But there's no way in hell I'm going to let a guy hoist my ham hocks up on a rope, suspended in midair while he has the most unflattering view of my body as I lurch towards my destination. I mean, you may as well just ask me to do an ever so graceful scoot down on the gyno table. You know what I'm talking about. But no, I mean, indoor rock climbing is for skinny chicks or extremely confident women that I need to take a self-esteem workshop from. Perhaps even something that Whitney from My Big Fat Fab Life would do. All right, now onward and downward to Ryan and Jackie. Oh, whoa. Oh, how the Buckleys have fallen. Now, at first, we have them going to Ryan's parents' house for dinner. Ryan's mom is showing him baby pictures and explaining each and every one. If any of you listening right now do that, don't. Stop it. Hand over the photos and we'll ask you if we have a question. Jackie doesn't need to know who gifted you the burnt sienna and brown afghan baby Ryan is laying on. Just keep it moving and refills on the Pinot, please. I did notice once again how Ryan's dad doesn't speak up too much. I have to think Ryan and his mom have a case of the talks too much and Father Ryan has just learned to zip his lip and make it easier on everyone. No wonder Ryan thinks his parents' marriage is perfect and he wants to replicate it. He just wants to talk all the time like his mom and Jackie can just shut it like his dad. Thank you, Freud. Your life's work has certainly come in handy in this case. So it's time. Guys' night at the pool hall and girls' night at the Buckleys. Now, girls' night was pretty innocent. Shaunice is clearly falling in love and her little annoyances about cooking sounded like a fairy tale to Jackie and Molly, just a complete 180 from where they were all at during the honeymoons. Now, Molly says that she's learned that she's a pretty good communicator, but she overthinks things. Isn't that just a woman thing? I think our brains are connected to our ovaries or something, because I don't know a woman alive that doesn't overthink every single damn thing. Now, Jackie, oh, if she only knew how this little 2-minute conversation that they were going to have would turn into an entire ordeal, a whole episode, in fact. Now, she says she knows that she and Ryan share the same values, but they don't share the same interests like she thought they did. For example, she loves to travel and wants to live abroad. Now, Ryan said he did in the beginning, but I'm also wondering if it wasn't just what he said to Jackie, it was also something that would have come up in a questionnaire kind of thing. But now, Ryan says he doesn't really want to travel, and as a matter of fact, he doesn't even want to give up his apartment here, even after this experiment is over. Now, Jackie thinks she and Molly are on the same page in that they are day-to-day with how they feel about the future of their marriage because they aren't getting on the same page with just the basics. Just put a pin in that, okay? Now, over at the bowling alley, John is drinking a fruity cocktail. Now, I swear to you, maybe 5 minutes before this, I was texting my friend Carrie saying how I think a man's drink order is the window to his soul. Think about it. And here comes John with a daiquiri with a twist. That to me screams, look at me, but I can't handle the truth. He can't take the shit straight. Oh, God, this whole scene was amazing. Now, Ryan, thinking he's going to get some bro pats on the back, starts saying that he got in trouble because he went out after their last guys' night with Pastor Cal. Jackie thinks he should change and come home, and he doesn't think he should have to change. This is who he is. He is Ryan Buckley, State Division paintball player, goddammit. Now, at first, John and Jeffy were like, oh, yeah, that's not cool, man. Yeah, she shouldn't be controlling. So then Ryan felt like he got the green light to let loose. So he shares his plan of keeping his apartment. Oh, it's not a big deal. You know, it's his money, his decision, what he wants to do with his money. And then he asks if Jeffy and John think that's weird. Now, Jeffy's answer was, Yeah, that's weird. And then John says, 100%. Now, you know it's bad when I think John is being honest. When John looks like a keeper, you know, a real good guy, a catch, something is very, very wrong with Ryan. Now, I think Ryan is just such a narcissist that he's mentally, emotionally unable to see that there is this thing called a compromise, and changing or growing is not a bad thing when you're in a relationship. But Ryan says that he signed up for this because he just wanted a girl to be part of his life exactly how his life is now. He wants them to love him and accept him for exactly who he is and what he does. Ryan, that's called a mom. No woman is going to want to be your Stepford wifey poo. Now, I'm trying to think of where Ryan picked up his game, like his man game. I think maybe he watched too many 80s movies where all the asshole jocks got the girls, because he even suggests that John try to get Molly in the mood, seduce her, by walking in naked and saying, "This is me." Now, thank God Jeffy jumps in to save John and tells him, like, whatever you do, do not listen to Ryan. But this is Ryan. He thinks he's got game. He thinks women fantasize about him and his stupid little carpenter belt and his enlarged dark nipples. No, no woman wants to see a man walk in naked, especially saying, "Here I am, this is me." I would never, ever touch my own husband again if he did that. I would have flashbacks, and I know he would look over to see me just absentmindedly staring at him with disgust without even realizing I'm doing it. And I would do that for the rest of my life and his life. Just say no to exposing your man dough. Oh God, that sounded gross, but okay, it rhymes. Just say no to exposing your man dough. Do we make that a thing or not? I think not. All right, so after Ryan embarrasses himself at the bowling alley, he goes home to Jackie to ask how her night went. Now she starts saying, okay, yeah, we had fun, talked about how things were going. Shawnee's and Jeffy, wow, it's so different. They're totally into each other, total lovey-dovey cute. But then Jackie says she feels like she's got some similar feelings with Molly. They got their ups and downs, challenges that come up. It's just day to day. And now, like flipping a switch, Ryan flips out. And you know he's thinking that Jackie must have said something negative about him. And since Ryan thinks he's perfect and he never does anything wrong, Jackie has to be wrong. She's lying or exaggerating or blowing things out of proportion. Now, I think Jackie senses Ryan is pretty buzzed and he's being stupid and argumentative. So she checks herself out and she says something like there's no point of talking to someone when they're drinking. Ryan just keeps running his mouth to the camera how there's no way he and Jackie are like Molly and John because he's so this and that. And that's when you hear Jackie finally vent it out and she calls, "Keep duck, 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 ducking." Now that's a relationship nail in the coffin when you throw out that keep talking line. There's not a lot of places you can go to earn respect back after that. Well, where's Orion to go after this? How about some drinks with our voice of reason, Brian? I want to buy Brian a drink because he basically calls out Ryan for overreacting and not having empathy for Jackie. Now, did anyone else get the feeling that Brian knows his friend Ryan can be a real ass? Like Ryan has probably brought a couple of good girls around and messed it up with all of them because he acts too cocky or selfish or something. Now, unfortunately, I don't think what Brian said to Ryan sunk in. It's like Ryan's schema of what's going on doesn't fit with what Brian is telling him, so he's just going to reject it and keep being stubborn. Ryan says at this point that he would likely choose divorce if he had to choose today. Well, you know what? I think Jackie just needs to get the hell out of there. I see her with a taller, more adventurous guy, a guy who actually listens, not pretends to listen because he thinks it looks good when he puts his listening ears on. Now, the scenes for next week look bananas. This is why I am so frustrated with the season, because it seems like they're messing with the editing in the order that they show us things to make it more dramatic. I mean, I get it, it's TV, but when it's a show that reports to be an experiment, you're not supposed to mess with the scientific process, right? All right, let's head south from Boston to Fulton County and see what happened at the 60 Days Inn tell-all. Now, at the time of taping, the participants have not seen the aired footage. Alan admits that he didn't know Nate was a participant, and Andrew and Alan suspected Nate was in on it, but he was there longer. He was there almost 120 days, so it kind of threw them off the scent. Now, this is really the extent we hear from Andrew, which kind of bummed me out. Now, Jacqueline, she says that when she saw Stephanie, she hugged her. Oh, I love Stephanie. I have a soft spot for her. Oh, all this stuff. Now, Stephanie's sitting there with her braces, just like, oh, yeah, me too. Oh, yeah, just wait. The foreshadowing, nicely done, Annie. Now, Angele, not knowing the heat she's about to get, says, no love lost. I'm feeling confident right now. Huh, confident. Oh, my God, shocking, right? She seems so humble. All right, Matt, you're up first. Okay, they have flashbacks of him walking around when he's doing, like, his practicing jabs and then the passing gas thing. He doesn't just pass gas. It's lethal. Okay, that's enough of Matt. Well, now it's Stephanie's turn. So they air all of Stephanie's interview sessions saying how she hates Jacqueline, how she's going to throw her under the bus, how she's competitive, so she wants Jacqueline to quit. And Jacqueline's seeing this for the first time, and she is pissed. She goes in on Stephanie saying, you were here for the wrong reasons. And Stephanie has nothing to say. She's just looking at her like, oh, okay. And then Jacqueline starts talking about street justice and I'll find you. Then she blows her a kiss. And then the other participants start calling Stephanie about manipulating Jacqueline to leave. And Stephanie just starts stumbling over a word saying like, well, let me explain and expound on that for you. I wouldn't say I didn't not want her to go. She's just like crossing her legs, trying to make herself look smart. She looked like an idiot, and whatever she wanted to pretend to be at this tell-all, she got called on it. Her game is over. Her dream of being on Survivor. Oh, yeah, that was a good one. Jacqueline totally ratted out Stephanie that she wanted to be on Survivor. I don't think she's going to be on it anytime soon. Well, then our host, Soledad O'Brien, comes in hot for Stephanie just as it's dying down. And she says, I'm going to say this in the nicest way possible. You came across as a sociopath. Whoa. And then Colonel Adger chimes in and says, I was thinking that too. Damn. I mean, I knew Stephanie was bad, but I really think they were piling on her. She deserved it, but I was just surprised. Now, Stephanie is very defensive. She starts trying to defend herself unsuccessfully again. And then she says, I will say this. My family says it too. I have a hard time with my feelings. Yeah, so she's a sociopath. Now, then we have a commercial break and we come back and my boy Johnny starts talking about his son who's locked up. You know how I feel about Johnny. I love him. He's got such a level head. He speaks the truth in a way that you can't be mad at him. And he starts talking about Emmanuel, how Emmanuel slash Bucci is selfish. He's kind of cocky. And you know I love an orthodontia shout out. Johnny knows what I'm talking about. He says he knew right away that Emmanuel was a participant because his teeth were too perfect. And just as Johnny is talking about Emmanuel, Matt pipes in with an old school SNL nickname calling Emmanuel the Boochmeister. I think Matt is the type who probably stopped watching TV 20 years ago. Like, he only allows his family to watch his own recorded sermons or ninja fights. I don't know. Matt scares me more than some of these inmates in there, to be honest. His intensity and his delusion is so strong. I would never want to be alone with that man. Let's move on to someone who isn't going to keep us awake at night. We get to hear from Alan about how he thinks the COs are quite unprofessional, and it really gave him a better understanding about the discrimination that takes place. And this is where Anjali jumps in about how she herself experiences discrimination. And then that leads to Colonel Adger jumping in about law enforcement and crime and black-on-black crime. Now, I'm going to be honest. I don't feel like I have experienced enough of this type of discrimination or violence for me to speak on this. Like, I know how it is. I just know that I want and hope and teach my kids that there should be none of it. Like, your friends are your friends. You judge people on their character and how they treat others, not on how they look and they speak. But let's just kind of move past that and get back to the fun part of the show, which is snarking on people, which is why we're here. So it turns out Alan is not a full-time law enforcement officer anymore. Kind of surprised me. He said his conscience just wouldn't let him send people to jail for little minor offenses because he sees how severe it can be. Then after another commercial break, Nate starts questioning the ladies about Whippet Wednesdays. He's shocked that they weren't worried about getting charged with an actual crime while they were in there. And Anjali got so self-righteous that she tries to hush the colonel and says something like, "You can't control me here, sir." And to me, this just shows how immature Anjali is. It just shows that she lacks all type of self-control. Okay, but back to Nate. He said that being in jail for 120 days was much more difficult than being overseas serving the Marines two tours in Iraq. Now, how do you even explain that to these lawmakers that claim incarceration is rehabilitation? It's like, it's just really so upsetting, and it's BS that once you're in there, you see and experience so much that when you come out, you're even worse than when you go in. And unless it's guys like Nate who befriend people, make a difference, made them feel like they were a person, established real personal relationship friendships, like, oh, God damn it. Nate just gets the utmost respect from me. Now, on the exact opposite end of the spectrum, we have Anjali. Now, the group participants see for the first time the actual footage of Anjali and how her relationship unfolded. No one can look at her, and Alan is by far the most pissed. Johnny said he trained with Anjali and he was rooting for her, but he thought they went in there with a friendship type bond and she blew it because he had a plan. He was making connections and he really wanted to create change and he thought he was getting there and then she blew it. But he's understanding because it's love and you're young. Once again, Johnny is much better than I because I'm still pissed at Anjali and I've been in my comfy leather chair watching with a glass of wine. Okay, so the question is, are Anjali and Gabby still together? Well, Anjali starts going on this tangent about compassion and empathy. So Soledad O'Brien just stops her mid-sentence, is like, oh, okay, great. That's different from sex. So while Anjali says she loves Gabrielle, she knows she lied and she manipulated her, but she still loves her. So that kind of leaves like, are they together or are they just talking? That seemed a little unclear to me. Now, then this topic leads to the logistics of how sex occurs in jail. The women create tents, everyone has a girlfriend, but in the men's pod, homosexuality is a huge no-no. Now, I love that A&E took Dan Abrams, who usually does these tell-alls with 60 days in, and replaced him with Soledad because she didn't hold back. And that is what viewers want. We want her to ask these questions. We don't want a review of the whole season. We want someone to hold people's feet to the flame. So with Johnny and Matt's help, Soledad kind of bullies Anjali into expressing an apology. Now, Jacqueline has a little moment, but I was watching Nate the whole time. He was just taking it in, letting everyone else who wanted to talk, talk. Whoever wanted to make themselves look like a fool, let them do it. Like Matt, who explains his prostate size and his dual pee streams. You know me, my gag reflex was in full effect. Now, Colonel Adger, it's the end of the season. What did your staff learn from the participants? Well, we get a scene of Colonel Adger reading straight from a PowerPoint screen, which is my pet peeve of any and all presenters. Please don't read to me. But all in all, I do trust Colonel Adger in the follow-through on the intel that he found out. But my only question is, will there be another season? I haven't gotten the chance to deep dive to find out, so if you know, if you're in the know, shoot me a message, fill me in, because I will be counting down the days. Now, after a quick break, let's get into some Teen Mom OG and Teen Mom Young and Pregnant. You know, this season of OG has been getting some hate because, let's face it, it's pretty boring. And I keep seeing people say it's because Farrah isn't there. She's not there to bring the drama. But no, this season was boring even when Farrah was on it. So I'm just thinking it's one of those sleeper seasons. Now, I am always partial to Teen Mom 2 because I always have fun watching Leah's fails with the girls and Janelle being Janelle. So I think we just need to accept this season of OG as it is. And at the very least, we get to play the game of which of Gary's three t-shirts will we see him wearing this week. I'm always partial to the Belden lineman camp. Now, I think what makes the most sense this week is to start out with Caitlin and Tyler. Tyler is still in Arizona visiting Caitlin at her treatment facility, and right off the bat, I felt like I was having deja vu because Tyler is talking to his mom, Kim. She's on the other end of the line back in Michigan trying to use Tyler's printer. He's telling her which button to press. No, the other button. Now you just wait. Mom, I said wait. You'll see the paper come out. Good job, Mom. This is essentially the same conversation my sister Jill and I have almost daily with my mom, who still thinks the remote for her fan can control her cable box and DVD player. So shout out to my big sister Jill. She says she listens. Sorry about that scar on your boob. I'm saying it out in the open. We once wrestled, tussled over a New Kids on the Block poster. Listen, it got heated. But to be clear, I'm sorry about the scar, not about putting Donnie's poster on my side of the room. If you hadn't have crossed that string to come over to my side, we wouldn't have had a tussle. But again, I'm sorry about the permanent disfiguration. So this is probably a good place to jump back into Tyler talking about family therapy with April and Kate's dad. Now, Tyler's heard that his dad, Butch, has been doing pretty well. He's getting himself some therapy, going through addiction counseling at his rehab facility, but he hasn't talked to him in person yet. Later, we get to hear that April got to have a day of healing therapy with Caitlin, and I laughed out loud when Tyler asked her what Caitlin thought she learned from April, and April answered, how to be a bitch. I mean, as much as I want to be angry for April for how she raised Caitlin, let's face it, she was a monster, but she is funny, and I am sure April could be a blast to hang out with. Not all the time. I said she could be fun at moments. Now, Tyler hadn't gotten a chance to talk to Butch in person yet, but what do you know? Ring, ring. Good old Butch calls in and fills Tyler in. Now, he didn't sound to me like he was in too good of spirits. I feel like we know Butch by now, and he sounded a little depressed. He says he feels out of place at this rehab because everyone else there comes from money, they're wealthy, they're successful, and I can see that being really uncomfortable in a setting where you have to, surrender to your truth and be humble. And I just think it's a really vulnerable spot to be in. So I have some empathy for Butch. I mean, I always do. You know how I feel about him. Now, since Butch has been gone, he has no idea what's going on with Caitlin. So when Tyler says he's in Arizona, he's like, what? Thankfully, we get like a love after lockup, 60 days in, one more minute. So Butch has to get off the line and no time to explain, too long a story. Save it for next time. See ya, Butch. Now, let's talk a little bit about Macy because she's decided to go and visit Caitlin in Arizona after she saw those social media posts that we've all seen if we follow up. Now, Macy doesn't know exactly why Kate's in rehab, but since MTV is paying and Macy needs a storyline other than her kids playing with things and crying, It's off to Arizona. Shoot, I don't blame her. I had two babies 13 months apart, much like Macy, and I would have loved a little day or two away from all the chaos. I wouldn't have dared do Naked and Afraid for 2 weeks away. I wouldn't want to be away from my kids that long, and I also wouldn't want to make everyone on this planet afraid if they saw me naked. Back to Macy and her freaking skinny-ass body. It looks like she eats grass and trains for marathons despite drinking her Miller Lite all day. Okay, again, my issues are shining through today. So anyway, she meets up with Tyler and Nova, and they head to see Caitlin. And I really should say Caitlin and Anna, the resident slash stalker. Now, I understand that obviously this is a facility protocol and they have someone chaperoning to keep patients safe, keep families safe, but the way MTV films it is so funny to me. They just make a point to let the camera linger on Anna just a second too long. And I feel like we saw more of Anna than we did Amber this week. Now, here's the scene where we get Caitlin, Macy, and Tyler all sitting down, and Caitlin shares why she's in treatment after all. And yes, she's had a lot of trauma in her life, but she also had a recent pregnancy that ended in a miscarriage. And just like Tyler filled us in last week, that miscarriage and just being pregnant triggers or reignites all of this trauma in Caitlin. And then Macy shares that she too had a miscarriage. Now, I'm just kind of a little miffed by this because Macy says that she didn't even tell Taylor until 2 months after her miscarriage that she even had it. Now, I want to be really careful not to question this too much because I am very lucky and fortunate that I've never had a miscarriage. I don't think I'd keep it to myself, not tell my husband, but like any trauma or emergency situation, I don't think we can truly predict how we would act when it happens. So I don't want to shame anyone for how they reacted. But what I do question is not only why all of those French fries and that burger went to waste, but the timing of Macy going to see Caitlin and that dinner Taylor and Macy had when they told the producer about the miscarriage. Because in this episode, Macy made it sound like she was just afraid to tell Taylor that she shared her miscarriage on camera. Oh no, what's he gonna say? Is he gonna be mad? But she said the same thing at that restaurant weeks ago. Now, I'm not sure. Tell me what you think, but maybe they were gonna leave that restaurant scene out of the season, but then they decided to leave it in after Macy went to visit Caitlin. We gotta try to map this one out on a timeline or something. Now, only because we are contractually obligated by the Reality TV Equal Opportunity Snarking Commission, we have to check in on Ryan and Mackenzie. Mackenzie wants to document the emotional manipulation of her son Hudson on camera so he can show his future therapist. Her son is in the backseat acting up, so she says to him, "Stop acting like your daddy." And not just once, but over and over again, to the point where the kid is screaming, "I'm not my daddy, I'm not my daddy." Even my own 9-year-old daughter walked in, looked at the TV and goes, "Kid, settle down." Yeah, what she said. Number one, Mackenzie, do not instill in your kid that their bad behavior is because of or a copy of their other parent. That is bullshit and painting your ex out to be the bad guy. I would love to know how Mackenzie would respond if Bentley were in the back seat and Macy was screaming her head off, telling Bentley that he's just like Ryan. Number two, if my kid were acting like that, certainly on camera, you'd be damn sure you'd see me look my kid in the eye, get down on their level, and have a talk with him or her in a firm no. This little, ha ha ha, kids will be kids, That kind of crap is why we have assholes on this planet. Just tell your kid, no, stop it. Oh, I'm not done. Okay, so number three, if Hudson loves having structure so much, like Mackenzie tries to tell us when she and Ryan are sitting there having that little pretend conversation on the couch, he would have been all smiles in that car. Mackenzie is so full of shit, and Ryan looked like he was about to fall asleep on that couch. He had that wide-eyed thing going on again, so I think he was on something then. Now, do we know, as of now, if Ryan is tested clean? Oh, we do. Little update at the end. Now, lastly, we see Jen and Larry join this couple of teen parents at the bowling alley with Bentley and Hudson. And Ryan is adding packets of sugar to something. If he's adding it to pop, I'm going to have to ask if this is a regional thing or if this is just a Ryan thing. I don't even know how Ryan functions anymore. Just the way he acts and eats reminds me of the Asante brothers on My 600-Pound Life. I'm serious. He's like an overgrown, spoiled child with enabling parents. Now, luckily, little Hudson doesn't crack his backbone in two when he lifts up that ball that's half his body weight. And then we see Jen sweating out her beer as Mackenzie alludes to wanting to have more babies with Ryan. Just keep drinking, Jen. Keep drinking. Because, yeah, this just in, not only is Mackenzie pregnant, Ryan Christopher Edwards has been arrested for possession of heroin. Anyone surprised? I don't think any of us are. Now, to me, the most surprising thing is learning that Ryan's middle name is Christopher and not Lawrence after Father Larry. Well, now we come to Amber. She is just the gift in an adult-sized onesie that keeps on giving. Amber is still at Brother Bubby's house so that her nephew can play with Leah while Amber and Andrew the Giant can slow talk to one another in bed all the day long. But goddammit, Gary and Christina are making her sweat her pancake makeup off her face because she is hot and pissed about what they've been saying on recent episodes of Teen Mom. Someone told her that Gary and Christina were saying she's a bad mom because she hadn't seen Leah all summer. Oh, come on. Amber is better than that. She's a new person. She's had a renewal like Ramona, and she doesn't handle things like she used to before going to jail. AKA jail, if you don't speak Portwood. Just kidding. Amber goes on Twitter and just starts blasting Gary, Christina, and anyone else who comments. Now, MTV did Amber no favors here. They were flashing screen grabs of her tweets, and it was amazing. Now, Amber is her own worst enemy. She is so clueless and doesn't realize that she is a bad mom to Leah. I think Amber thinks that as long as she doesn't hit Leah, as long as she's nice to Leah when Leah's even around, then she's a good mom. Because even when that producer, who, you know, the one that I hate his face, when he asks Amber to respond to what's going on, tell us the truth from your point of view, Amber says, it's not true, so they can't even say that. I saw her three times this summer, not two, so that's bullshit. That, for real, is her argument. Seeing her only three times is shitty, Amber. If you had time to meet a boyfriend, you had time to see your daughter. Now listen, if you don't have a job and you're claiming you want more time in custody with your daughter, you should be seeing her two to three times a week. I can't wait to see my kids at the end of the school day. I can't even imagine going a whole summer only seeing them 3 days and being okay with that. Now, of course, Gary and Christina are pissed because Amber created this entire situation on Twitter that she didn't need to. She just turned it into a circus with online articles and all this other kind of crap. Now, I was actually thinking the same thing as Christina when she mentioned, you know, her teachers are seeing this stuff, other parents are reading this stuff, they're going to be judging us, judging Leah. I mean, hell, you guys know I was a teacher and I would have been eating this shit up back then. And even now as a parent, I would be pulling up my skinny pop and following this shit all night long. But Amber doesn't think about this stuff because she's not involved enough for it to even occur to her. She's in her house in her pink footsie jammies with her giant wannabe Panama Jack all day. Yeah, I saw that stupid dorky dad hat Andrew was wearing when they dropped Leah off. He looks like every overeager, overplanning, dorky dad at the Grand Canyon who thinks he knows more than the docents and stuff. And how dare Amber steal my dream of renting a motorhome for a family road trip? Maybe they rented it because Bubby's plumbing and the great state of Florida couldn't handle Andrew the Giant's elimination. I mean, between he and Amber and the heavy carbs and dairy they must consume all day, I do think that is a real possibility. But before we wrap up this episode, we get to see Amber back home in her own house. She's dressed up like a mix between Grey Gardens, Little Edie, and a baby Halloween costume from Party City. Whatever look she's going for with that headband and the earrings and the ugliest choice of eyeglasses I've ever seen, she looks almost as bad as Andrew, who's now wearing a robe and his hair is just overgrown. He's got this nasty ass beard. The guy is dirty. You can tell he hasn't showered in days. Like, you know that look, right? And Amber probably hasn't either, which is why she's wearing that headband just to like cover up her greasy roots. Ugh. Now, Andrew is also trying to promote this non-existent writing career. We gotta point this out. So he's suggesting that Amber replying to the tweets and then deleting them, you know, it's just like a creative flow, man, like a real expression of free thinking and expression. Okay, fuck off, Andrew. Go find some creativity in the drawer with some scissors and the wall clipper set. Just start with a 3-guard, buzz that shit off your body. Now, thankfully, Amber is there to leave us on a good note as she sniffed away tears that never actually materialized. Leah will be good. I know she will be. Yeah, because she's with Gary and Christina, that is precisely why Amber knows that she's going to be okay. Now, in fact, we end the episode with Gary and Christina making dinner with Leah while Amber is looking at her phone with a giant animal next to her and her stuffed animal sloth. Now, let's just keep the drama at a cruising speed and head right on into Teen Mom, Young and Pregnant. Oh, Ashley and Barr. I cannot keep my eyes off of Barr's rich Waikiki overbite. Every episode, I'm just staring at those teeth, daydreaming about what a well-fitted Invisalign could do to those incisors. Now, Ashley is still fired up from the baby shower when Shenny from the block, Barr's mom, went nuts and wanted to throw down with Ashley and her mom. And Ashley is certain that Barr could have stopped it, but I'm not so sure. Do you think anyone could stop Shen? I think it would take Gary and a taser to stop that woman from doing anything. But Barr is going to try. He does. He FaceTimes her from the safety of a public street with witnesses. And he tells her that she needs to just like settle down and don't be so offensive. Now, I think Barr's rat tail was offensive, but perhaps I'm just being as petty as Shen is accused of being. I don't think so, though, because there's never a good reason for a rat tail to make a comeback. But the conversation didn't seem to come to a place of understanding, which was concerning, because Barr tells her, like, you gotta control yourself, Mom. And then Shen says Barr needs to control Ashley, and she better see her grandbaby. But I'd like to know how many of you think that Shen would have been controlled by her baby daddy. No. Later, Barr and Ashley go to a place called Endless Summer Suites, located in Berkeley, California. You guys, they have funnel cakes, and funnel cakes are basically extra special donuts. So you know I would pile drive one, okay, let's be honest, like 3 of those. And you know I looked this place up, and guess what else they have? caramel apples. Specialty caramel apples made with Grain Granny Smith's. That is what makes life worth living. Now, if Tony from Sister Wives went there, he'd also be a happy man because guess what else they have? Mexican hot chocolate. Now, unfortunately, these two had to ruin all for me and cut the date short because Barr won't shake Ashley's hand to agree that his mom, Shen, won't come to the hospital when she gives birth. Now, I am honestly curious what your opinions are here because I'm siding with Ashley. I think it is your labor, your birth. If you don't want someone there, tough for them. They can see you in a day or two when you get home. Now, next on the list is Kayla and Stefan. Last week, Kayla found out Stefan was cheating on her. They had that big blowout fight. But what do you know? Stefan's calling her to hang out just as friends. Sure, Jan. I mean, what's a girl to do when a boy brings you to an arcade where you reenact the scene from the 2010 version of Karate Kid when Jaden Smith does Dance Dance Revolution with his love interest? Now, ironically, I hate Stefan as much as I hate Jaden Smith because as soon as Kayla decides she's over with Stefan, he starts playing with her emotions, says he loves her and he wants to be with her again. And you can also see that Kayla's mom is seeing how this is all going to play out. I mean, we all do. The millions of us watching this know how it's going to go. But strangely, Kayla sees it too, but she just can't snap herself out of it. Ugh. Now, let's break down the slow-moving train wreck that is Brianna and Danae. Brianna is now 36 weeks pregnant, so she's considered full term at this point. The baby could come any day now, so Brianna's mom is like, hey guys, what's the plan for the birth? Who's going to be there? How are you planning this with work, getting time off? But you know what? No worries. Danae has taken Brianna's due date off. So Brianna, if you could just dial open that cervix that day, that would be great. Okay, now how are you guys going to be managing your money when you're taking all this time off for the baby? Well, who needs Clarissa when Danae can explain it all? All he needs is diapers and wipes. I mean, Brianna's mom must have the self-control of Brianna from Real Housewives of Orange County. I don't know. I mean, her patience is on a whole other level than I would be capable of. Somehow, she manages to calmly explain that maybe they might want to put some money aside for things the baby might need because, you know, she doesn't have the extra money herself to raise someone else's kid. But damn it, you know that is how it's going to play out. All of this stuff is going to fall on Brianna's mom's shoulder. And I'm just hoping MTV pays her mom enough to be on the show to offset some of that cost. Later, Danae and Brianna are taking a walk and we have Danae explaining his logic. You see, if Brianna's mom would just let him move in already, he could use his rent money for the baby instead. But she's just so mean and such a bitch and so irrational that she doesn't want her daughter's boyfriend that doesn't like her, treat her with respect to move in her house. I know I'm supposed to like Danae because he's transgender and everything, but I just can't stand his entitled attitude on this. Like, maybe if you cannot afford this baby, you don't play house with a baby. And let's not forget that Brianna's still a minor. She's still her mom's responsibility. Danae is not Brianna's mom's responsibility. So, of course, this leads to the real fact of the matter. Brianna is stuck in the middle. Now, I have a feeling she really doesn't want Danae to move in. Anyone else feeling that? I think Brianna sees how quick Danae is to get upset and angry. And I think, or maybe I like to think, Brianna knows that it's not going to end well if Danae moves in. So they end up having this little tiff on the sidewalk, only lasts a few minutes until Danae comes running up and apologizes. It's just, I think these two need to just cool it off for a while. But I mean, this is Teen Mom, so we know that's not going to happen. Now, up next is my girl, Jade, and her boyfriend, Sean. Now, to me, there is something very likable about Jade. I think it might be because she works, she supports herself, she has common sense about her that makes her kind of relatable in a way. And not only that, it's a combination of coming from a rough upbringing that just makes you feel for her in a way that's different than, let's say, Alexi. So we're at 37 and a half weeks. Jade's been going to all her doctor's appointments alone. She wishes someone would come with her because her boyfriend Sean can never come. So she calls up her mom, complaining that she feels like a fat ass cow. And her mom says, "Welcome to the club. Welcome to the big bitch club." Now, I thoroughly enjoyed that. And I think every woman who's been lucky enough to be pregnant can relate to that. Lucky to have that feeling, but just that emotion of, I am done. I want to be able to bend over again. So, Mother Jade, can you go to the appointment with your daughter who is begging you to go with her? "Well, Jade, I'm not good today." I mean, for real, woman, it's just so friggin' heartbreaking to watch. I would go with you, Jade. And you know what? That goes for any of you guys out there. If any of you need a friend to go to an OB appointment, call me up, send me a message. I will be there. I love that kind of shit. And I will treat you to a donut and coffee afterwards, my treat. Now, actually, donuts make an appearance this episode because Jade and her friends go to the street fair kind of thing. And I mean, you know me, I smell a donut, I see a donut, it's like, it's on my radar. Now, those homemade donuts looked a little too handled by humans for me, but let's be honest, I probably would have sampled it. Now, Jade's friends start to question her about Sean, and from Jade's answers, I think it's pretty clear that she is so annoyed with him. I don't even think she said anything about loving him, just that she's pissed off at him because all he does is play video games and they don't even talk. Now, it appeared later that Jade was pretty gentle in her approach to Sean. She likely learned that from her experience with her parents, and we all know you choose partners based on your past and your childhood, so of course Jade is going to choose someone unknowingly with the same traits as her shitty parents. So she cozies up to him and says, "Hey, you want to go get some dinner? Maybe go for a walk?" "Nope, I don't want to go anywhere. This is what I do to relax. This is how I choose in my life. Just accept it." That "just accept it" really struck me as harsh. Like, how about just accept it that Jade wants to go out? So Jade ends up leaving the room and says, "Sean, you can just go away." And then it just escalates and he tells her to go to hell. Now, maybe it's just me, but I think what she said about going away and him saying go to hell, it's just two totally different levels of mean. I don't think in my life I've ever told anyone to go to hell, but I mean, boy, people have hurt me and I would have loved to have said it, but it's just really severe. So anyway, Jade ends up leaving the apartment and then Sean packs up his gaming stuff and drives off too. I was hoping he was boxing it up and he was just going to throw it in the dumpster, but what was I thinking? This isn't Trading Spaces or Marriage Boot Camp, both of which this couple needs. So I'm thinking he is moved out. Now, lastly, we have Lexi and Kyler. Here sits Jody, jaw ajar, because Lexi is in an accelerated program to graduate early before the baby arrives. I am stunned that Lexi does anything at an accelerated speed. I'll just kind of like leave that right there to simmer. Now, because Lexi's in this accelerated program, she's not at school. So what the heck, guys? Why are people still talking about her? No one should be talking about the girl who has a freaking camera crew following her around on the show that's sharing her story with the planet. It's just so rude for people to talk. Now, what I actually think is rude is Lexi's friend sending her screenshots of what people are saying about her. Now, I'm just thinking, if that person were truly your friend, they jump in there and stick up for you. I know it's tough to do, but if you're brave enough to say it on camera with MTV sitting right there, be brave enough to say it in private to someone's face. I would hope that my kids would stick up for their friends, and I would hope that would be reciprocated. Maybe I'm just giving teens these days too much credit, but to be honest, I think if you can be vocal and you can speak up and you can be like these amazing teens in these marches this past week, damn it, you can send a little angry emoji to stick up for your friend, all right? Okay, so what else happened with Lexi? Well, Kyler is still wishy-washy with her, and Lexi is still not listening to Kyler when he does answer clearly. I think they are both to blame with this are they together, are they not thing. Now, they were going to go to this homecoming dance as friends, but when Lexi went dress shopping, holy shit, I needed like half a dozen of you in my house with me to just hold me back, bro. She was upset that the store employees couldn't make her stomach shrink down with a little wrinkle of their nose and a little nod. I damn near lost consciousness when I heard the sales girl say she had a double zero for Lexi to try on. So, I mean, anything could have happened while I was just like in a blackout. You guys, a double zero. I didn't even know this was a thing. How is that a thing? Is it just like a Carter's store for kids or Gymboree? I want to go to there. Well, anyway, now Lexi is mad because she thinks the sales girls were like super meanies, like in Pretty Woman. Guess they didn't want me trying on their merchandise. Yeah, it had nothing to do at all with the fact that you should have been walking down to a pee in the pod or gone with that pretty goldish bronze dress that they had you try on. No, that's not going to do. Now she's just not going to go to the dance. So instead, Kyler's going to take her out on a date. Now she says it's a real date, that they always go on real dates. But they aren't a couple, or are they? Now we're all confused again. So Kyler shows up looking more and more like Travis Pruitt, eldest of the Pruitt boys from the movie Overboard. He's even got that stupid hat on his head, and Lexi's all dressed up and in heels. And just as she's getting in the car, her ankle just kinks itself into the rocks and, ow, and what a dumbass for having your pregnant maybe girlfriend walking through the rocks and those things. So now they're at dinner. Who the hell knows where they are, but it's filled with country wooden chairs and old people. So you know they must have a very reasonable early dinner special. And Kyler is complimenting Lexi, telling her that she looks extra cute. And to be honest, I was starting to see why she gets confused. However, I think what it is, it's that it's the way Kyler segues in and out of conversations that gets him in trouble. Either that, or he has a future in motivational speaking or interview techniques, because he starts and ends with a positive. So he never really ends the relationship. So just like last week, he says he wants to be friends, but Lexi says he's confusing because you don't have babies with friends. Then he validates her opinion by saying, oh, that's true, and smiles at her. I can see Kyler just becoming exhausted by this and just settling down with Lexi in the long run because it's just the easiest thing to do. But I still think in the looks department, they are in two totally different leagues, probably two different divisions, really. After the jump, let's get into TLC's Sister Wives and Three Wives, One Husband. Well, who do we have here but the gorgeous and overly qualified host for the Sister Wives Tale Part 1, Ms. Andrea Canning. Now, I prefer my Andrea on Dateline. Throughout this entire episode, I was just waiting for her to give us a little plot twist that would involve Mary slipping some unknown substance into Janelle's water bottle or texting her friend Cheryl sexy time messages offstage. But instead, she inadvertently shaded the wives with her bare arms and shoulders. All right, let's be real. Cody was not going to allow Andrea to get all the attention tonight. So Cody arrived wearing a man bun. Now, at first I was shocked, and it really took me an entire hour to wrap my mind around it, because number one, it's way better than the mid to high ponytail. Number two, it is infinitely better than it is down these days. And number three, I was kind of digging it for Cody. I'm not saying I think he's hot. I'm saying he is a moderately attractive man without the extraneous hair around his face. It's like when a stray dog gets a haircut and you see what's been hiding under that shaggy mane for all that time, or like getting a new bra and your girls are high and tight and your rib cage gets its first cool breeze in years. In other words, it was refreshing, I enjoyed it, and I welcome the change. Now, all the wives agree that they like the change too, except Mary. That isn't that surprising, but I thought the cowardly lion herself would have come around, considering she herself got a little makeover with a top knot at the Oz Beauty Salon in the original movie. But Andrea eases into this tell-all with a flashback to the conversation about the bed and breakfast Mary wanted to buy. Well, here we go again. Not even the first question in the show, and Mary is talking about herself again, how she's a victim to the person she was trying to cheat with. A few years ago, when I had that bad stuff going on, catfish thing, my family was telling me I need to tell them what's going on in my life. I didn't realize they interpreted me telling them about my mom and the B&B as being a final decision. But you guys, she currently owns the place, so what the hell is she talking about here? This is Mary with her revisionist history again. Mary is awkwardly laughing as everyone else is laughing too, like, yeah, like Mary's just going to go buy this place without her blessing. Well, does anyone know when this tell-all was taped? Because she bought the place in October. So why is Mary, or really all of them, pretending like this is just Mary's pipe dream? What am I not getting here? Am I reading too far into this? I don't understand. Well, now we got to talk about that scene in the car with Cody and Mary talking to the reporter. Oof. I don't know whether to be more offended by Cody telling this random reporter about the status of Mary's now extinct sex life, or that damn Florida Lee dangling from the rearview mirror. This family loves a Florida Lee, perhaps even more than Tamara from Real Housewives of Orange County. What could you possibly need a fleur-de-lis dangling in front of your face while you're driving? The only thing I can think of to use it for is like an impromptu shiv, or like a ninja throwing star to throw at some asshole in traffic, or maybe Cody uses it to like separate or part his crispy waves of hair. Or maybe Mary uses it as a stencil to draw her eyebrows on. The world may never know. Now, here's where I knew Andrea Canning was the woman for this tell-all. She wasn't pitching softballs to Mary, or anyone else for that matter. "Wow, Mary, that was hard to watch." To which Mary responds, "It was hard to feel." Okay, fuck off, Mary. Should Cody have said it? No. But to pull this, "Oh, it's hard to feel" stuff on Cody is pretty ballsy, considering you keep talking about this online relationship you were having behind his back. I bet it was pretty hard for him to feel that too, and hard to see you taking selfies in the bathtub with your favorite banana. Now, Cody admits it was pretty dumb, but he did it to be snarky to the reporter as a way to prove the law was dumb. I myself take offense to Cody describing himself as snarky. Beat you to it, Brownie. Now, without skipping a beat, Andrea just scoots this little interview along and casually asks if Cody and Mary are intimate. Whew, girl, you have got some huge cojones under those spanks. Cody very comfortably answers that, yes, it's the same, they're not intimate. And Mary pouts that she wants more than that. Yeah, we know. You want more of everything, Mary. She has enough room behind the wet bar for anything she wants. And side note, one of the most amazing apples in the Facebook group found out that Mary, you know, the one with one child who doesn't even live at home, has the second largest house out of all the four wives, who they each have, what, like four, five, six kids or something? Joseph Smith on a cracker. I cannot with this woman. After a commercial break, it's time to talk about what the wives' roles are and what they will be after the kids are grown. Thankfully, Mary's roasting is not over, so we get a flashback of Mary saying that line about how she's not going to go into her sister wives' home and take care of their kids. That's not going to happen. Well, as quickly as she can, Mary starts in on the defensive, saying, well, I am involved. I come to family events. I'm here. I'm involved. Now, I was side-eyeing the shit out of my TV screen on this one. Mary, we have had whole two-hour episodes on you not being involved. You left Maddie's birth. You weren't there for Garrison's army homecoming. You were gone for Maddie's pregnancy announcement. We have her on tape not being involved. Now again, canning for the win. How about your sister wives? Do you all agree with Mary that she's involved? Robin? Well, Robin just speaks her heart. Mary herself says she feels like she doesn't belong, so damn, how Robin was able to sneak in those zingers without Mary biting her head off like she does to Janelle every time amazes me. Well, here it is, my favorite question of the night. Mary, do you feel like your relationship with Cody is affecting your relationships with your sister wives? Well, basically she's saying, hey, since Cody doesn't love you anymore and he doesn't live with you, sleep with you, like you, or even talk to you anymore, does it make it hard to be friends with the wives he does like? Cue the waterworks in the Hall of the Great Oz, because the Cowardly Lion is crying again. Yes, I'm not supposed to do this right now, so I wasn't going to cry. Okay, Miss Utah, like, no one had their money on you winning Miss Congeniality, so you're fine. Let the tears flow. Well, then we have Robin starting in with the first dropping of therapy speak. Mary, is it safe for you? For me? Yes, it's safe for me. For everyone else, I don't know if it's safe. Okay, somewhere under a dream catcher in a Navajo quilt, therapist Nancy is very proud of herself for giving this family another catchphrase to use besides wet bar and street tacos. Now, my girl Christine jumps in and says, let me help you, Mary. When Cody and I were not in a good place and we were spiraling, it was hard to see Cody having a good relationship with everyone else. Everyone else is so happy. And now Cody and I are so happy, so happy. He tells me I'm thinner and we dance and he loves when I sing and he married Robin legally and Janelle gave him his first sons. And okay, she didn't really say the last part, but I mean, it was implied, right? Well, Mary insists that she's going to fight to have a place and she does not want it to be platonic with Cody. Okay, so right here is where it's a little hypocritical of Mary. She was mad that Cody told the reporter that they're having issues and not cohabitating. But I think Mary is being possibly even more candid in pointing out that she and Cody haven't bumped Bibles for years, right? Do you see the hypocrisy in that? Now, it's also very telling how Janelle and Robin respond to Mary if you read between the lines and just take in what they said. Janelle said that she sees an improvement in Cody and Mary's relationship because they have had some cordial conversations. Mary agrees and says, yes, we just both need to work on it, insinuating or implying that Cody isn't working on their relationship. But then Robin looks at Mary dead in the eyes and says, yes, but I really think you both need to work on it. And she kind of nods, again, insinuating, implying that Mary is the one not working at it. So what's your take on it? I would place my bet on Cody being skeptical and hesitant, probably tired of Mary's victim mentality, but he's trying to work on just liking Mary again, despite her being selfish and wearing hideous rags on the daily. And Mary, being Mary, likes saying, well, Cody's not trying, so I'm not going to try because guarded, why wouldn't I be guarded? Well, we're not done yet, because now it's time to revisit the birth of baby Axelrod. Safe? Is it safe to talk about Maddie's birth? So this whole thing is now settled. They all finally agree that it was just a mix-up. There's no doubt in my mind that Mary saw on film how wrong she was about her timeline and that she herself indeed let herself out the door. So we need to take a moment to discuss what the hell is happening with Mary's hair. I didn't even realize I was focusing on it and getting lost in thought about it until I realized I hadn't taken any notes for like several minutes. And I don't even know how we got to Cody talking about that damn march on Utah with that creepy Joe Darger. I don't know. But what do you think Mary is trying to accomplish with her hair? Like, what look is she after? And what is she doing to make it go so wrong? My hypothesis is that she wants to have like beachy waves. So she's using some sort of product, like maybe a styling paste after it's dried, perhaps a mousse on dry hair. And then she has one of those styling irons with the wave plate, like I know Bedhead makes one, but she's not being careful to stay in line and like be even with the waves going around her head. Am I making any sense? Do you know what I'm saying, right? I just think if I were her, I'd take a break from any type of heat styling for as long as possible. Do some sort of conditioning or strengthening treatment. And then if she must style it, just gentle low heat with a hair dryer, maybe even a low temp skinny flat iron to do some soft curls. She knows her way around the internet, right? So she can find some YouTube tutorials. I don't know. I needed to get that off my chest. I feel a lot better now. Maybe we even make like a Pinterest styling board for her. Just give her some suggestions, and really for all the Browns, right? They need a lot of help over there in that cul-de-sac. Now, a few things that I enjoyed about the tell-all. While first, Janelle looked fantastic. Her hair was shiny and smooth. Her makeup looked great. Her eyebrows and lashes were on point. The black dress with that bold floral surprisingly looked really good on her. Way to go, Janelle. Christine looked good. Nice, healthy glow. No more Debbie Downer. Robin, she always looks the same all the time. Now, the set was a bit of a cluster to me. How many floral arrangements do you really need? I counted 6, plus vases, candy dishes, boxes. It was a lot. It was very distracting. I love a good backdrop, but you can tell that this was some TLC intern's big project, and he or she was like, I'm going to nail this one. I'm going to just sweep the home goods clearance aisle. I'm going to make it under budget, but no bueno. Also, what is going on with the Smile Direct Club commercial? One of them has a couple who looks like the one couple from Real Housewives of Potomac. They're no longer on the show. Remember, it was Katie and her forced to propose to her fiance. I think it was like Alex or Andrew or something. But this is their B-list commercial doppelgangers. And then they also found some dentist daughter to do an Orajel commercial that they always play with Sister Wives. It's where she found a blind date to go on after being a hoarder for years. Thanks, Orajel. Ugh, I mean, how about a follow-up tell-all on that Orajel hookup? I just can't with commercials anymore. I just need to learn how to take 3 to 4 minute power naps, I think. Now, we are not done with the Browns just yet, because we got a second hour of Family Fun Game Night. We know it's Family Fun Game Night because Christine tells us, as she oh so casually opens a door to a camera in her face and says, 3, 2, 1, hello, we're having Family Fun Game Night tonight, where everyone plays a game to learn more about each other's lives. My family would lock me out of the damn house on probation if I announced this kind of game to them. But not the Browns. They start moving furniture around, gather all the tall bar stool chairs, swing couches to and fro, except for the tall bunion chairs, which are in Christine's custody now. They used to be at Robin's, but I think she was able to rid herself of them when she got the legal wife status. Jealous. So who gets to be the MCs for the night? The ever well-spoken McKelty, who has borrowed Tony's bangs to wear for the occasion, and Gwendolyn, who appears to be chewing on gauze packing all night. Now, this game they have everyone playing is just a disaster. There are noisemakers, and everyone turns into an attention whore when it's their turn. Poor Dayton is the only one raising his hand like an actual human being with a soul and a brain, and these idiots didn't even call on him. Now, some of the flashbacks were actually kind of funny. Mariah losing her shit when they played an April Fool's joke on her had me laughing, believe it or not. That kind of stuff is funny to me. And of course, the few seasons when Robin introduced the rest of the wives to her super hip fashion of long sleeves under tank tops. Ah, the good old days before LuLaRoe flash sales. And of course, scenes with Cody before he stuck his finger in the socket and his hair turned into Doc's from Back to the Future. Seeing Cody in that convertible in a suit, he looks like a totally different man. I mean, the sun damage from the Vegas sun hasn't helped things, but the shorter length and the fullness that he used to have in his hair, I mean, man, remember when we all thought it was bad back then? And we know now it's terrible, but this makes the wondering what chemical processes that his hair follicles have been put through at this point. It's truly a pressing matter. Now, speaking of truly, we got a flashback of when King Solomon married Robin in that outdoor amphitheater, the same amphitheater where Truly performed a one-woman show that she forced the family to watch. Funny they didn't replay that scene. Wonder why. Now, I was actually excited to see the flashback of the Richard family. They're the weird polygamous family that shared a bed and they would stare at each other in the eye when they would eat bites of food at the same time. I can't even imagine that ever happening in my house simply because everyone starts eating before me or I'm getting up to refill my kid's cup or fetch baby carrots or an apple for them like I'm their little bitch. But at least I don't have a kid like Gwendolyn who is screaming at the losing team of her own family members to eat the lemon and the peel, eat the peel, eat the peel. What kind a sick puppy is this girl? She makes Tony look like Tom Hanks if this is her version of fun family hostess with the mostest. Mary doing push-ups was also a highlight because I know for a fact I've seen Tony sit on the floor in that very spot, and he's not the type to hold in a carne asada fart. So with every dip of those push-ups, I was thanking the powers that be that Mary lost that challenge. Oh, ready for a hilarious memory? Okay, hold up. Remember when Cody challenged his wives to make caramels? Robin, stop laughing. Oh my God, so funny. Mary, do you remember this? Oh my God. We went to the store and we bought caramels. Oh my God, it was so funny. Because you had to be there. Yeah, you probably had to be there to understand what the headband on Robin's head was for too. But oh man, the good old days before Robin got pregnant and became legal wife, things have changed. It's at this point I think Mary stopped laughing because Cody yells out, "Hey, what's this we've come to, ladies? We promote lying and cheating?" Well, yeah, we do. And we know Mary does. Well, Mary took out her anger on Christine when they had to arm wrestle one another. And there is no doubt in my mind that I saw Cody slightly push Mary's arm down when he was refereeing, but God damn it, Christine had to cave and let Mary win. But really, who's the real winner? The one that got to go home alone in her LuLaRoe duster that was just lying on top of Tony's carpet fart? Or the one who's got to sleep next to Cody that night? Yeah, for real. Like, who is the real winner? Because they're both terrible options. Well, we see Christine pitting out, unfortunately, as she's retelling her birthing of Truly, pushing her out of her womb over and over again. If I didn't know any better, I think she just had a glass of wine, but I think she was just using the physical motion to try and sweep away the memories of Cody and Robin bragging about their romantic honeymoon to the zoo. I don't know why I don't remember that Robin and Cody went to a mother effing zoo on their honeymoon, why would you choose to go and smell animal shit for your honeymoon? Maybe they just hadn't started farting in front of one another yet, so they figured, oh, let's have a day at the zoo. We'll just kind of like let things flush out. We can blame it on the rhinos. I don't know. But at this point, there is a staring contest between Mary and Cody. Super awkward. But I notice Peyton smiling in the background. You guys, do I have a weird affection for Peyton? It's not like a crush. That's gross. It's reserved for the weirdos on Netflix age gap. But there is this gentleness and pride I feel when I see that little big tall man. Like, I just want him to, like, be my neighbor's son. Like, tell him, thank you for bringing out my garbage cans, Peyton. Keep that up and I'll gift you with a mighty quarter someday. I just love that young man. Now, somewhere in my mind wandering to why are there three different sets of colored and patterned drapes on each of the windows, Mary is suddenly being forced to give compliments to everyone because apparently she lost. Shocking that she knows the least amount about her family considering she's always there, right? Well, oh shit, this is gonna be good. Janelle, congrats on beating me because it's all competition with you. Yeah, she actually said that. Hey, therapist Nancy, like you listening in on this shit? She also told Janelle that she likes her hair when it's reddish. Okay. She thanks Christine for pushing her kids out of her fabulous womb, and she likes her high energy. Robin, love what you've been doing with your business. I kind of stalk you on the internet. Yeah, once again, we've noticed that you're good at the internet, Mary. Way to call yourself out on it. And your constant positivity to me. Cody, I love how much you love your kids. Thanks for being a good dad and father and husband. So wait, what about that husband part exactly? Yeah, well, hopefully we get some more on that next week when we get the tell-all part two. And you know I'm going to be psyched because we get to see Tony. You get a taco and you get a taco. Everybody gets a street taco. Now, hold on to that taco. Ration it out because you're going to need it as we take a road trip deep into the mountains where polygamous blast homes into the side of mountains in three wives, one husband. Now, I got caught up on 2 weeks worth of this show, and I think the count is more like 1.5 husbands and 6 wives now. Don't try to do the math, just trust me on this one. So no sight of Enoch lately because he's nursing that broken heart after the nanny turned him down, and I know there's some news on that, but I'm not going to spoil anything just yet. So what is up with Abel Morrison? Well, first wife Susie is definitely the best wife. She makes a lentil soup that lures in new sister wives. She's the best dressed, and she's always in the best mood because Abel totally whispers to her that she's his favorite. I won't believe anything otherwise. That's why there's zero drama with her. She has no insecurities. And going along with that, I think Susie's in that stride of motherhood when women are past the baby and toddler years. Like your kids are school aged and up. You can shower when you want to. You don't have to worry about your kid waking up or dying from choking on a fruit snack. They can buckle their own seatbelt and fill their own cup. It's like living again, ladies. You feel on top of the world, and Susie is there. Like my girls, Stephanie and Lynette, say on the For Crying Out Loud podcast, Susie's in the corner office, but Beth and Marina are still in the mailroom. So Beth is just a bag of miserable. She can't stand to be around her kids. She'd rather drop them off at Marina's and go to work. Once again, she's our Janelle Brown of the wives. And Beth also despises Marina because Marina's always texting Abel when Abel is with his other wives. That would drive me crazy too. But it must be way worse than we can imagine because when Marina gives birth, Beth can barely muster a congratulations and says that she doesn't even want to visit the hospital because she's going to be seeing the kid for the rest of her life covered in red dust anyway, so what's a day? So while Marina and Abel are at the hospital, we meet this woman named Anna, or Anna, who doesn't know why 2K has come and gone. Apparently the residents of this place are preparing for the apocalypse. She shows us her bomb shelter that's stocked with things like canned peppers and canned venison. Well, I'll tell you what, my kids are fucked if there's an apocalypse because they would eat the glass jar before anything else inside of them. I also wonder if it would be against their Mormon faith to send their boys in this town to the Duggars Apocalypse Training Camp. Maybe there's a non-denominational apocalypse camp. If there is, I can tell you right now that's where we're going to have a reality TV meetup because, holy shit, that would be some prime people watching. Okay, so where was I? We had Anna Lady. Oh, okay. So yeah, this Anna Lady, she looks an easy 60, but her husband, Carrie, he's kind of hot for a dad. They're one of those couples that you would never put together, but somehow they've been married forever. And Anna must be doing something crazy in the bedroom, or she's got some Putin level dirt on Carrie because he hasn't married another younger wife. He seems slightly more open to it than Anna, because of course he is, but she answers for her husband to the producer and tells her, oh, we have a lot of eggs in the basket right now. That may be true, but yours aren't ovulating and dropping, so I think Carrie's going to be looking outside that coop pretty soon. They also have a daughter that wants to start courting some kid with a jacked up grill and braces, but snooze. Been there, done that with the Duggars and Sister Wives McKelty. Remember when she tried to do that once in high school and then the guy dumped her after Cody described how biology and saliva hormones work? Okay, so let's go back to the Morrisons. Well, now that Marina is home with the baby, she's had time to realize she was being immature and selfish with her time, so she apologizes to Beth. Now, this is all happening as Abel is doing double dutch by himself outside. Really, ladies, this is the man you're fighting over. Go throw a game of jacks at him and see if that'll win him over. Like, he really is not that much of a prize. Now, I was actually very surprised by this mom's only vacation the wives have planned together. Good for them. Abel was stupid enough to question them on it. And thank God they pointed out the same thing that I said a few weeks ago. This guy has got it made. He got 3 honeymoons and he gets to go out every weekend on dates. He has the best life of anyone in that family. Now, the trip really didn't look that great to me. I mean, maybe throw in some wine, some late night truth or dare, would you rather? Now you're talking. But what they went on, I guess it was fun for them. So now all is well in the cave city. I forgot whatever it's called. Okay. But Abel's brother died and left 2 wives. Now in the polygamist faith, it's expected that the brother marry the widows so the DNA stays the same and the children of the new husband is considered the same DNA as the first deceased husband. Yeah, I know it's confusing. And also confusing is that even though the wives would be remarried, in the eternal afterlife, they hook back up with the first husband. So the new brother husband is just like a least dick. I don't know. I don't see how that's ordained by God. I see that as some sick man's fantasy scrawled out into a book. I'm not digging that little rule they have. I mean, I'm not really digging their big rules either, but that one just really takes the cake. So the whole controversy is whether Abel will marry his sisters-in-law. First wife Susie doesn't give a shit, but Beth and Marina don't want to have 2 new wives and 7 more kids added to the family. I can only imagine how long they've been waiting to get the siding to be installed in their house and all these repairs to their backsplashes and now adding 9 more people to the house. That is going to be pushed down to like number 374 on the honey-do list. However, in an unexpected twist, Anna Zella, one of the widows of the deceased brother, she's the one with the braces, she's got a pretty face, she starts dating this hot Alaskan guy named Trevor. They met online, he's super cute, of course he's a personal trainer, and of course he loves God and his country and a good godly woman. But as soon as this guy comes to visit her, gets a tour of the cave town, and sees how gummy Annazella's smile is. He full-on ghosts her. It's Trevor's loss. Too bad he didn't get to see Annazella doing her hula dance. No, not like a Hawaiian hula dance. A hula hoop dance. I don't know what the hell kind of hula hooping they teach in cave school, but there was some bizarre form of seduction Annazella was attempting. In the end, both widows decide to stay single and not marry Abel. Anyone else think it's because they don't want to leave their much nicer house with the ceilings and the siding? I wonder if they have baseboards. You got baseboards? Oh yes, that's right. Up next, Real Housewives of Atlanta. Last night, I got caught up on my Girls in Atlanta, and man, if you are ever in a bad mood or you need a laugh, this is the show you have to watch. Even if you are not a Real Housewives fan or you never watched it before, tune in for an episode of Atlanta, and I dare you not to laugh at the things that come out of these ladies' mouth. Now, I don't know if I'm normally refilling my wine glass or making things symmetrical in my house when the opening taglines come on, because I never noticed what Sheree said. She says, "Call me a bad server, because I always spill the tea." I was thinking that she said something about a bone collector, but I mean, call me a bad server, because I always spill the tea. That is really bad. Who told her that was good? I'm guessing maybe the same friend that told Nene her blonde Muppet wig was good. Ugh, Sheree, we got a crowdsource for you. Get you a new tagline. Now, right off the bat, I knew this episode was going to be bonkers. Portia and that Radio Ricky guy are at the location of one of my first panic attacks that would occur at about the same time each year, first with grade, and that would be a roller rink. I shit you not, my kids had some school thing at the same roller rink that I used to go to as a kid, like last week, and I used every tactic possible to brainwash them into not wanting to go. Do you even know what roller skating in the 80s was like? I remember putting on those nasty, syphilis-carrying copay on wheels, coasting at high speeds into the carpeted wall on every straightaway, then just shuffling along the ledge, praying no one would be leaning over while I scooted my way by. And then they had those show-off teens working at the rink, and when you would fall down, they'd zip over there, blow their fucking whistle so everyone could see which loser just wiped out, and then you can't get up because you're on freaking roller skates. Ugh, I mean, I would be a sweaty, hot mess praying I'd be coincidentally busy when they called the couple skate at the end of the night, so I'd have a legitimate reason why I didn't have a boy to skate with. Wasn't at all because I was decked out in head to toe, New Kids on the Block paraphernalia or anything. Lord, okay, I'm serious. I'm so anti-roller rink. I should probably start a march of my own. Wow, okay, so how much do you charge in therapy, you guys? Where the hell was I? Who are we even talking about? Okay, Portia. Focus. Okay, Portia is pretending to be like a Jessica Simpson, like, oh, I don't even realize I'm flirting. What? So while Ricky is giving Portia CPR in her ass, Cynthia is pretending to work indoors with sunglasses on. Unfortunately, Erica Jane beat her to it, but I have to say, I think Cynthia did it better, and I am certain it is from the Cynthia Bailey eyewear collection line because I did look it up. Now, it's very interesting how the editors tried very hard to make Nene's offensive comment about the audience member and an Uber driver. Google it if you're interested. I'm not going to repeat it. But it's just something that sticks out to me how Bravo is choosing to point out that they do not condone what Nene said. However, they're making what she said half the show's story arc. Well, turns out Candy's own production company has chosen to sever ties with Nene over this comment, so Candy feels like crap. I think Candy does feel badly about it, but Candy is also smart. She finally got to a place with Nene that they can coexist. She doesn't want to stir stuff up with her again because they've already had their issues. She's got issues with Portia going on. Call me cynical because I am, but I think Candy clearly staged that whole meeting with Don Juan and Todd in those Sister Wives oversized chairs so they can have it on film that it wasn't Candy's idea to can Nini. So that way, if Nini tries to start in with Candy on this at a later date, she can just be like, okay, roll the tape. I mean, I honestly don't care the real reason Candy filmed that scene because it resulted in me seeing my favorite Nini line ever, something I say in my head at least 3 times a day to my kids or my husband or strangers. I said what I said. So for that, at the very least, thank you, Candy. Okay, now what the hell is Sheree doing to the chateau? She is building out her basement to be a whole new house, basically. She's got contractors down there making a 5,000 square foot basement into a nightclub, a spa, a man cave. I think she had a gym down there, a bar. She's basically trying to replicate Heather Dubrow's house on a Lynn Curtin budget. Now, there's no way in hell Sheree can afford all this, right? You know what? Maybe we should ask her financial planner boyfriend Tyrone how she's doing it. He seems to have a real grasp on the project. I mean, he's even calling in now. You guys, that sound of that automated voice telling us there's a call from an inmate at a federal correctional facility brings me so much joy. Brings back simpler times when we didn't even know about Love After Lockup or 60 Days In. So this guy, Tyrone, calls and he's just way too smooth, way too confident. It is verbatim the same stuff Lizzie would tell Scott on Love After Lockup. The I love you and appreciate you. I'll be out soon, just in a few months. He's even talking like he's going to buy her houses or going to go on vacations. Yeah, not so fast. Now, I posted an article written about Tyrone. I think it's like Gilliams. I think it's his last name. It was when he was arrested way back when in Philly, before we knew about him when he first got busted for this scam. Now, just a few days ago, he was denied early release, so he's not going to be visiting Chateau Sheree until November 2022. Yeah, sorry about that, Sheree. You might want to be saving up for more of those collect calls if you plan on staying with this guy. Oh, did you hear that? Brent with 2 T's because Greg has 2 G's. He wants to be a stand-up comedian. Didn't he just ooze humor and charisma as he mumbled his way through a round of pool with Nini? It's like another housewife kid who wants to be gifted a career. Next. Oh, Noelle, what's your professional wish to be granted? You want to be a prosthodontist, eh? First, I say good for Noelle interning. Second, Noelle, make sure your mom Cynthia knows it's not as high paying as she thinks it is, because according to Google, it averages $168,000 a year. Now, I'm not saying that's bad, it's a good amount of money, but I don't think it's going to be subsidizing Lake Bailey's taxes and covering the overhead of Cynthia Bailey Eyewear and Backpacks Inc. Finally, we get to Kenya's big night. The night she's going to show her 60-second PSA for domestic violence. Now, I'm not going to knock the cause because it's a serious issue. It's something that hits somewhat close to home, but this is a snarky recap podcast. So I'm just going to say that I am 100% certain my third grader could have recorded and produced that PSA. For all the effort and the lighting and the videographers, maybe we needed to see this video head on, but I don't think they got their money's worth. But besides the PSA, what were we all watching for? That's right. Kenya's maybe paid for TV husband. Is he gonna show? Well, sure enough, here he comes. All 4'7" of him through the door. He was cute-ish. Immediately, I zeroed in on that nose ring, and so did Sheree. God, I love Sheree because she just slithered away into making fun of his piercing. Where'd you get that nose ring? I want to get one. And then Shamia. Yeah, so dainty. Damn, ladies. Like, I don't think it's about Mark looking feminine with it. I think it's what they are implying. I personally just think it looks stupid. It just doesn't fit his look. It doesn't look cool or trendy or speak to his personality. It just looks like a piece of jewelry stuck to his face. And then the genius of Bravo. The producer breaks the fourth wall and they get him asking on camera to Nene, Kenya and her husband, do they appear to be truly in love? And then Nene says, Kenya appears to be truly in love. So this leads me to my two questions for you. Number one, do you think Kenya and her husband are really a couple? And number two, do you enjoy Nene? Not do you like Nene, but do you enjoy her? I personally think Nene can be offensive, and not just the comment that this episode focused on, but I think she can sometimes lean towards being homophobic. However, I cannot help but find the things she says funny, okay? She isn't funny all the time, just as she isn't offensive all the time. And to me, when she's funny, damn, she is really funny. And I went back and I watched her reaction to Portia telling her to be accountable for her words and actions 3 times. And then I went back again in the morning just to start my day with a good laugh because Nene freaking nails it. She knows how to do it. Well, I hope your day had some laughs in it. If you want to laugh and join in on the snarky discussion all week long, head to our awesome Facebook group, search Reality TV Pod, and you'll find us. Please remember to subscribe, leave a 5-star written review. Really helps me out greatly, helps spread the word so I can keep this little podcast that could growing and bringing you more shows. So thanks so much. I will talk to you next week. And remember, stay salty.